This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters on the Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. The Royal Balloon International Hornbill Expedition 2018 is happening in early September, and it's a chance to record all 10 species of hornbills found in Malaysia. And joining me now to give us a 101 on hornbills, specifically those found around here in Malaysia, is Andrew Sebastian, the CEO and co-founder of the Ecotourism and Conservation Society of Malaysia, or ECOMAI for short. And ECOMAI are the organizers of this expedition. Welcome, Andrew. How are you today?
Thank you, Juliet. Thank you, BFM, for giving us an opportunity to talk about hornbills.
Always a pleasure. So yes, I realized that we have not spoken about hornbills before. Yes. Mr. Birdman himself has not actually...
Wow, that's going to stick, huh?
Mr. Birdman, yes. Okay, but before we get into that, tell me, how are things going at ECOMAI?
Well, we're doing fine. It's a busy period for us. We're having another Orang Asli project. Next week, in fact, in Taman Negara, we're donating solar panels to some Orang Asli communities along the Tembeling River next to Taman Negara. So that's very exciting. That's happening next week. And after that, of course, as you know, it's hornbill season, and we are so excited about to tell the world what's going to happen in our skies up north. You know?
Okay, so this is an annual sort. It's like a migration sort of.
Yes, it's our signature event, the Hornbill Expedition. Every year we try to. This is our fourth year this time, and every year we try to highlight, hey guys, something really really exciting is happening in our country. Don't have to go to NatGeo and book a flight to Africa to see. An interesting migration. Mm-hmm. It's happening right here, not too far from us.
Okay, all right. So can we do a little bit of a 101 on hornbills?
Right.
You know, some people, I've been reading mixed sort of things. They said it's our national bird, but it's not quite our national bird, is it? It's only...
It's not yet our national bird. Okay. I'm hoping someday, soon.
Okay, so I mean, how many species are found specifically here in Malaysia? I think there's about 55 in the world.
54. But you know, people are splitting birds these days, so a lot of scientists
feathers,
are out there.
Sorry,
yeah, they're splitting. Pun intended.
Bad joke.
Yeah, so... New birds are being described, subspecies and being split. But for now, 54, could be 55 soon. In Malaysia, we have 10.
10. And this is just Peninsula Malaysia or?
East
Malaysia as well.
East Malaysia has 8. Peninsula has all 10 of our species. Okay. Yeah. They do not have 2 species over there. But it's still called the land of the hornbill, so for a lot of other nice reasons, Sabah and Sarawak. Mm-hmm. But yes, we have 10 species. In Asia, we are number 2. Only to Thailand.
Okay. It's not even Indonesia.
We share. Same numbers, but we are number 2 in Asia.
Okay.
But for a country to have 10 species of hornbills, something interesting like Belum, where they can congregate, and you have an opportunity to get to record all 10. If you're lucky, in a space of a day, 2 days, you know, you get all 10, and that's pretty amazing.
Okay, all right. And so obviously they get their name because of their very interesting beaks, which I think they're called casks.
Busseros, the bills, the casks, all of that.
Well, it's enormous.
In Greek, yes. Yeah.
It's beautiful.
Cow horn, you know, the Greek or Latin description of the bill of the hornbill, or the beak, as some people say. Downward curved, it describes a very special bird that one of its kind.
Mm-hmm.
So the family is described because of the huge artistic, I would say, very, very, very diagnostic bill, shape of the bill.
Mm-hmm. Okay, all right. And so we've got 10 species here, mm-hmm. and 2 of the largest, that's the rhinoceros hornbill and the helmeted hornbill?
Yes, and the great hornbill.
The great
hornbill, it's heavier, so it's considered the biggest here.
Mm-hmm.
The helmeted hornbill has an elongated tail. Mm-hmm. It cheats a little bit. It has the extra tail, and therefore, lengthwise, it's long. It's the longest, yes.
Okay.
But we have the great hornbill here that does not occur in Borneo, unfortunately.
Okay, mm-hmm. All right.
So the big one is here, yes.
The big one's here. And where do we find them here in Peninsula Malaysia?
Well, the thing with hornbills, they prefer primary forests, mature forests, most species, apart from the oriental pied hornbill that you can find quite easily in Pangku Island, Langkawi, coastal forest birds. Yeah, but most of the other hornbill species, they prefer primary forests.
Okay.
Therein lies the unique habitat that they need to live.
Okay, all right. And what do they generally feed on? Is it fruits?
Hornbills are omnivorous, so main diets will be fruits, But just like you and I, you know, we sometimes have to supplement that with some protein. So Hornbills also take insects. They take snakes.
Oh.
They even take small mammals, you know, like juvenile squirrels. Yeah.
Okay.
And other birds.
And other birds as well. Okay.
Yeah, omnivorous state.
Okay, okay. And their lifespan is quite long, actually, right?
Between 30 to 40 years.
So
it's actually pretty interesting for something as large as magnificent to be able to have 30, 40 years in our forest.
Mm-hmm.
It's really interesting.
And another very interesting thing is that they are mostly monogamous, or they are solely monogamous.
Yes, they are mainly monogamous. they pair for life. Their courtship behavior, of course, captured by Nat Geo and thrilled everybody because of the special rituals that happen between a male and a female. Well, the males, of course, it starts off with the males preening themselves. You can already draw an analogy with humans, yeah? So there's this guy who's going to Bangsar later tonight, you know, so he's like doing his hair up and he's ironing his clothes, you know, stuff like that. So the male hornbill, picture this again, preens itself.
Are we drawing from our own past?
No. Right. Yeah, Bangsar.
Bangsar, a bit outdated.
Old school, yeah. So anyway.
Showing your age there. Sorry.
I'm so young. Sorry. Okay, anyway.
Sorry.
Okay, so he's preening himself. He's going to go and look for a girl. And males will outnumber females for now. She sits on the branch and this bunch of male hornbills come over. And they're jostling. They're trying to get her attention. She looks. She doesn't commit to anything, of course.
Let's
talk about birds. We're still talking about birds. Okay, so the male chases her around. This is like a Hindi movie.
Okay.
Chases her around. A few other males join and they knock each other off, you know. And then they do the macho thing. They
have like a face
knock,
off?
Yeah,
like
they face
like
off
a beak
each other.
Off?
Yeah, they have a big, they hammer each other with beaks, with their beaks and their bills and their casks, yeah. And finally, that one guy that's still there, or that's perseverance, you know, she will have a closer look at him. And each of them will bring her fruit. It's a gift. Some call it engagement. I read somewhere it's an engagement gift. So he will present her with a fruit. And she, as soon as she accepts the fruit from the one male, it means it's already a done deal.
Oh.
Not quite there, it's a done deal. She takes the fruit from that one male, mm-hmm. Mr. A, let's call him, okay? And then...
Andrew?
It's the first alphabet, come on.
Sorry, I should give you a hard time. I'm giving you a hard time.
Yeah, okay, let's call him Andrew. So anyway, she accepts the fruit, yeah? And what she does, interestingly enough, she passes it back to him.
Okay.
And back and forth it happens, it goes. The exchange, because it is an exercise, a conditioning, in which when they finally mate and have a nest, the male will have to use the same exercise to feed her through in the nest.
Oh, wow.
Yes. So they do that. They even bite each other on the neck, sort of. They mm-hmm. preen and they bite. And they exchange the fruit again. They fly off together. They mimic. So it's a pretty interesting ritual.
Very elaborate sort of
very elaborate
courtship.
Yes.
That
yes.
I guess, and it's all for survival, isn't it?
Yes.
Because
the survival is conditioning. They pair for life. So she has to be sure.
Okay. And mm-hmm. I mean, when they do eventually mate and have babies,
well,
chicks produce. They only produce chicks like once or twice a year or something like
well,
that.
Well, once a year maybe
once a year.
Maybe one, maybe two. Yeah. So Mr. A and Mrs. A, they go off and they have to look for a crevice on a tree.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time it's a tree, yeah? And a crevice on a tree is not something that you find every day. It's usually a broken off branch from a tree,
right.
And it becomes hollow. Or it was an area where a woodpecker was hunting and was making a burrow or something like that.
Sure.
So they have to find a hole on the tree big enough that she can go in.
Oh.
They inspect it. They go. She gets in there. And if she likes it, she plasters herself in.
Okay.
Using mud, regurgitated food, she passes herself in until there's only, passes the gap until there's only a small slit,
mm-hmm.
just enough for her to, for her, Mr. A, to put his bill in to feed them.
Wow.
She gets in there and she sits in there for almost up to 4 months, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, and she lays her eggs, one, two maybe, yeah, and for 3 months, it's the male's job to bring room service. So every day, 1 kilogram worth of food, the male has to go hunt.
Okay.
He brings it to her again, passes her through the slit in the nest, and she feeds. She feeds the young, and a few weeks later, when the young is hatched and is growing up quite fast, she breaks out of the nest. They plaster it together, the nest again, so that the baby is safe. And by the time she's molted, she's heavily molted because she's been sitting in that dark crevice for 2-3 months. Yeah? So no feathers, very weak, can't fly. And that's why it's very, very important that at that point, the male does not disappear. The male is not hunted. Yeah, the male is not trapped. Because if the male disappears, she cannot fly. She cannot feed for herself. She and baby will die.
I suppose even before that, right? Because even when she's inside laying the eggs, I mean, if she's not getting any form of sustenance from the from the male, both are going to die.
Yes, if she has feathers, if there's a survival, instinctively she will fly off. She'll break down, she'll fly off, and it'll mean that the nest and the eggs will be left.
Okay, all right.
So Mr. A and Mrs. A pass the baby back in. They feed it. 3 weeks later, baby's strong enough, he breaks out. And for a month or two, they take baby on flights. They show baby how to feed. And 2-3 months later, he's big enough and he has wits about him. And they send him off to the world.
Amazing.
Bye-bye, baby.
Amazing. So everything, I know everyone has their place. Everyone has their responsibility. There's no single parenting going on here.
No, baby has to find his own. Yeah, the young man has to find his own range, his own mate.
Okay, so I guess, I mean, that whole act of, you know, encasing themselves in the tree as such, I mean, that's of course to protect them from predators.
Yes, yes it is.
Nothing quite protects them from the human predators, of course.
Yes, unfortunately.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was reading they are on the red list of the IUCN.
Well, some of them, especially the helmeted hornbill, because it has such a beautiful casque. A casque is another extra knob on top of the upper bill.
Sure.
Yeah? It's red and it's... You know, when people see something really interesting and they think it has magical powers and, you know, medicinal value or something like that, they get hunted. So the helmeted hornbill has been put up very quickly on a critically endangered list, so which means not many left unharassed in the wild. In Malaysia, they're doing not too bad. There's not a lot of cases of hunting here, but it's a bigger problem up north. And I won't say countries, but up north, how they bring back this here. No problems, yes.
So threats, of course, to them would be, I suppose, land loss.
Yes.
Poaching,
yes.
Illegal wildlife trade.
Yes. We've lost over 30 to 40% of our natural forest cover since 1954. And hornbills depend on natural mature forests because they need to feel safe, and this is where they hunt. This is their home, and they need to find that one tree with that perfect hole.
Yeah.
I walked in the forest for many years. I look at trees all the time, you know, and you know I'll be hard pressed to point out, oh, I found one or two trees with a nice gap, you know, which birds can nest in, you know. So it's very, very difficult to find that.
Okay. It's interesting. I was reading, you know, one of your colleagues, Irshad, actually, who wrote that he witnessed once the hornbills actually crying or making a terrible sound when they saw their trees being cut down.
Yes, yes. Well, it happened on Langkawi Island, I think. The tree, unfortunately, was cut down. Mm-hmm. And you can see the nesting pair was really upset about it. You know, it was really upset. And if it could talk, it'd probably be telling us a lot of things that you usually bleep.
Humans, what are you going to do with them? And there's an increasing demand. I was reading in China is being dubbed red ivory.
Red ivory, yeah. The casque of the helmeted hornbill is called. As anytime you name something red ivory, you know it's going to be someone out there who wants to buy something.
Oh,
you know,
dear God. If
we've done a good job in hunting down the rhinos for the ivory and elephants, of course, and why not? Yeah, move on to. I'm sarcastic, of course. Why not move on to hornbills? You know, let's
Because I was reading that, you know, conservationists, they actually estimate that some of these species might actually be a mere 3 generations away from extinction.
Yes.
And I think this has a lot to do with also their reproduction cycle as well and all of that.
It's pretty unique. They don't produce all year round, you know. They are very careful parents. They have limited range in most parts of the world now. Forest, we are losing the forests. Better guns to shoot them, unfortunately, and or trap, you know. So all that formula brings to about a bleak future for them if we do not do anything about it now.
Okay. But I mean, they have been afforded like the highest level of, I suppose, protection, right, under IUCN.
Well, they've been classified as critically endangered. So it's up to countries to take action. And that's where the details, that's where the most important point is. We can classify them as anything, but if there's no action on the ground to protect their homes, mm-hmm. you know, to enforce, to have teams out there with guns patrolling against poaching and so on, it's going to be futile.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. And I guess, I mean, that's where I suppose events like this expedition comes in right. handy, comes in, you know, to mm-hmm. create more awareness. So tell exactly. me a little bit about this Hornbill expedition.
Well, this is our fourth year now. What we try to do every year is during the Hornbill season, we call it Hornbill season, in July onwards, up till about end September, early October maybe, in the Royal Belum and Temenggo Forest Reserve landscape. There's already 9 resident hornbills there. So any other months that you go, if you're lucky, you get on 9 species, yeah? Okay. But the 10th one is migratory. It comes from Thailand.
Okay.
So it flies in and stays in that forest area along with Ulumuda for 3 months.
Wow.
Yeah, the young birds come in, they're feeding all along the Temenggo Lake area. So in the months of July till about September, you have the chance to get all 10 in one boat ride, for example. And and the plain pouch hornbill that flies in from Thailand, they fly in big flocks of hundreds to almost 2,000 sometimes. You know,
yeah.
So you're sitting on a boat. If you're lucky, you're sitting on a boat in the morning and you hear the birds fly across and you see not a flock of 10, but you see another flock of 10 behind them, another flock of 20 behind them, another flock of 20. And it goes on endlessly for the whole morning, you know.
Wow.
And at the end of the day, when you count, you say, oh my God, 2,000 over plain pouch hornbills in one area, you know. And then you say, my God, how come not many people know about this, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Malaysians, we didn't know. Nobody told us, yeah? So the idea of the expedition is to create awareness,
mm-hmm.
Get some people on the boats during the opening of the hornbill season,
mm-hmm.
Challenge ourselves for 2 days. This is a 2-day event. Get out there and each boat try to record as many species as you can. And then come in and then post on your Facebooks and media and tell people, hey, you know, it's hornbill season in here in the Temenggo Lake area, Royal Belum in Temenggo. Come and see for yourself. You know, the birds are in, they're flying in. And my boat has seen 8 species. My boat has seen all 10, you know. And
get a competition.
And yes, and get people excited about it.
Okay. And who can, I mean, is this open to everyone?
You well, know, it's not, unfortunately not open to everyone this year. Okay. Last year it was. Next year is going to be, we hope to make it bigger and we're going to put in a few more extra boats out there
okay.
so that members of the public can take part if they fulfill some criteria. They must have interest, basically, to get out there in the great outdoors and do nothing but stare out in the on trees, wait for movement and pick up a binoculars, pick up the camera, take a photo and so on. Yeah, you must have that interest first.
Okay.
And then we see, because spaces are limited, we don't want to put thousands of people on it, no, in the forest to all stare on hornbills, but it's going to be a limited number of people. But we're going to open slots for the public maybe next year. This year is already filled up because we have limited spaces this year.
Okay.
But please wait for our announcements, wait for our postings, because as soon as the expedition starts, we like to keep everybody informed. We like to take videos, we like to showcase, and we hope people get excited and inspired, and if they know where things are and what to expect, then they can anytime drive up to Royal Belum, jump on a boat and enjoy it for themselves.
Okay, yeah. All right. And just out of curiosity, I mean, you've been doing this for 4 years now, mm. so the numbers that you've been counting for the last 3 years, I mean, mm. is it sort of like a steady sort of number? Or
well, it's not as big. The plain pouch, for example, we go to see it because of that season. Yeah,
mm.
the numbers have not been very consistent.
Okay.
Yeah, from the record breaking 3,000 over birds years ago, these days I don't know. Again, it's a big forest complex.
Sure.
And down south in Temenggo, logging is still happening. So in Temenggo Forest Reserve, it is a production forest. There's still logging going on, and I think it has affected the path or the migration or the foraging path of the birds.
Mm-hmm.
So we are not seeing all big numbers. But you know, the last trip that we had was 300 over plain pouch hornbills, and we got all 10 species last year. One boat got all 10.
Wow.
So people are excited. The birds are there. It's just a matter of us getting out there and, in fact, getting lucky, in fact, sometimes to get all 10.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So I guess we should just, you know, stay tuned and keep up to date with the EcoMind?
Fingers crossed, yes, yes. We will keep everybody updated. We'll try to go live on Facebook if possible.
Oh, that'd be nice.
Yeah, if we find the foraging groups, yeah. And we want the world to know and hey, put us on the map again, yeah. As far as EcoMind is concerned, our job is to connect people back to nature, and things like the Royal Hornbill Expedition, our bird courses, the camps we do for kids in Telok Bate, and the talks that we give to the public and so on. It's all aimed towards you listeners. I mean, be receptive, to keep an open mind. Nature will help us out, you know, more ways than one. We just need to get inspired and get involved.
Okay, all right. And don't buy any red ivory.
And definitely not.
Try as best as we can to save our rainforest, you know, whatever's still remaining. Okay,
perfect.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Andrew. So if you'd like to find out more, the website for EcoMy is ecomy.org. That's ecomy.org. And again, just get involved. And you also have a Facebook page, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. Yep. Yes, EcoMalaysia.
EcoMalaysia. All right. Thank you so much. I've been speaking to Andrew Sebastian. He's the CEO and co-founder of the Ecotourism and Conservation Society of Malaysia, or EcoMy, and we were talking about the Royal Belum International Hornbill Expedition 2018. If you missed any part of this interview or any previous Earth Matters interviews, you can search for the podcasts on our BFM app, available on Google Play and the App Store. This has been Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.